Hello, everybody, and welcome to Saturday. Yay, it's the weekend. Yee-hoo. I've been dreaming about being at the beach, Christine. just dreaming about it. So we're here today. It's a Saturday.
It's actually cold. It's been raining a little bit, but it's cold as 75.
Yeah, it's going to be warm today, which is going to be in the mid-70s. So yeah, we're looking forward to a really nice day today. So anyway, we're here today. It's Saturday. We met yesterday. Some of you couldn't make it yesterday. Some of you did. And the purpose of today is actually twofold. One is I want to clarify a few things and questions that have come up about things like oxalate and sulfur sensitivity and specific types of sensitivities. As I was preparing, we're having a kitchen show today and it's on low oxalate diets. And as I was preparing for that, you know, I realized like if you're trying to go low oxalate and low sulfur, oh man, that's really challenging. If you're trying to, you know, combine these things, it can be super challenging. So I want to clarify that a little bit. And I just want to be open to whoever didn't make it yesterday that has questions and whoever made it yesterday but has more questions to be able to answer it. And then we're just going to keep this short so I can go prepare for my kitchen segment shortly after this. So when you find that when you have a food allergy, right? That's the complete elimination. Like we're eliminating certain foods completely so that we can determine when we add them back, is our body reacting? Because the body gets, you know, it gets really good at adapting to bad situations. And the examples I use are a smoker, right? The first time anybody that is currently a smoker ever took a puff of a cigarette, their body rejected it with venom. You know, the first time you take a sip of alcohol, you know, grab grandma's wine or dad's bourbon or whatever and sip it, you're like, bleh, what is this? And your body reacts vehemently. But keep doing that and your body adapts. It goes, well, I guess they're going to keep poisoning me. I'm not going to react this badly. But the reactions still happen on the inside. So with food allergies, we just eliminate, you know, we eliminate a bunch of foods, we add them back. When there's a sensitivity to certain segments of the population of foods, so to speak, things that have oxalates, things that have sulfur, things that are high in FODMAPs, it's challenging unless you fast to completely eliminate them all. And for folks who can fast, it is a good way to do it because it lets you see, whoa, what does my body feel like when it doesn't have to deal with any of this? The goal with food allergies is to eliminate them all for a while and then be able to heal the underlying dysfunction so that you can add them back in. Some food allergies you're born with or you're born with a tendency to. My husband did not like eat a lot of soy as a kid and that's why he developed a soy allergy. He has like this immediate response to soy and he ended up in the hospital a few times when they didn't know what it was. People didn't eat a lot of soy back then, but they had started to put it into burgers and buns and things like that that his family did eat. So he discovered that the hard way after expensive and scary trips to the hospital. But with the food allergies we're talking about, they just tend to constantly give us this unwell feeling, right? We just don't feel well. And then we remove them. We go, whoa, add them back. With the oxalates and the sulfur, we're talking about going on a low sulfur diet, a low oxalate diet. And that's very different than a no sulfur, no oxalate. Because honestly, if you have multiples of those, the only way to really do it is fasting. And fasting is only a short-term solution because we can't just say, I'm just going to fast for the rest of my life and I'll be fine. Like, where they haven't created those little pills you take with all the nutrients, there's no, you know, IVs you can go and get. So we need to learn to live with them. With certain ones, when you just take them out or take the bulk of them out, you may feel immediate feeling of betterness, right? But sometimes you feel worse before you feel better if you go too fast. So that's what I want to caution you. If you've been reading a lot of, you know, gunk on the internet and they're saying, well, no oxalates, and you're going, oh, I'm oxalate sensitivity, I'm just going to go no oxalates. You can feel way worse before you feel better. because as it's not coming into your body is then doing what they call oxalate dumping. And it's looking like, where, oh, wow, we have some oxalate over here in these joints. Oh, we have some oxalates over here in the kidneys. They're about to form stones. So we're going to get rid of them. And it starts to pull them out of storage and put them into circulation. And then you feel worse before you feel better. It can happen. It has, I've seen it happen to multiple people. So we always recommend in the case of oxalates that you do it like 5 to 10% decrease every week until you get to a what's called low. It's impossible to get to a no oxalate, like I said, unless you just eat meat and arugula basically for the rest of your life, you know, because they have negligible or no amounts. And that's not a sustainable diet. Meat and arugula for the rest of your life, not a sustainable diet. With the sulfur, the same sort of thing, like, you know, high sulfur foods like cabbage, unfortunately, cabbage is low in oxalate. So somebody who's trying to do both is like, whoa, there goes one source of my foods because it's high in sulfur. So you don't get rid of all the sulfur necessarily. There's just, you're going with the lower sulfur. You're getting rid of the really high foods. I recommend if you're doing that, that once you get to that low oxalate, low sulfur, low FODMAP, that you do it for minimum a month, but honestly, maximum for three, because you should be able to be healing the underlying dysfunction while you're avoiding these things. Because if you don't, then you put them back in and they're still going to get into the bloodstream and cause you havoc or still affect your gut. So that's what I wanted to say about that. Whereas the foods, if we're eliminating foods, because we're eliminating a lot of foods you eat regularly, just to find out what you're sensitive to, and you put it back in and you find out you're not sensitive to it, we're not making you restrict it for a month or two or three. Although some of the foods with allergies, like dairy, like gluten, the antibodies that are created against them can wreak havoc on your organ systems in terms of autoimmune. So we do recommend long-term elimination. But for lots of them, if you eat kale every day and you're suspicious, well, I just said go on a rare foods diet. So now you're eating bok choy and I don't know, mustard greens instead of kale. Then you add the kale back in and you're fine. Then it's not like you have to leave the kale out for this long period of time, which is why we talk about 4 to 7 days. So that's all I wanted to say about that particular thing, in case people are like, how do I do this? This is so hard. Elimination diets are hard, but the alternative is hard too. Living with bloating, living with headaches, living with joint pain, and living with gritty eyes or whatever it is, low energy. Some of those things that are subtle that we don't realize, right? So we can tell when we're bloated. We can tell when we have grit in our eyes. We can tell when we have joint pain, but we don't always know if the level of energy we feel isn't just our normal level of energy, or if we're being impacted by foods until it goes away. And then you go, whoa, I never knew I could feel this good. And the way you really even realize that you feel that good is when maybe you make a mistake and you add something back and then suddenly you feel the old way again. And I remember that feeling really, I'm like, holy cow, I used to feel that way every day. I'm going back to whatever, what I was feeling yesterday. So that food is going on the hit list for a while. Long story short, my way of getting rid of my food sensitivities and my fatigue and my reactions was a long-term fast. I did a 28-day fast supervised at a place that did that. It's not something you do at home because you do need to be monitored for, you know, electrolyte imbalances and other things that could be problematic. So I did that for 28 days. And after that, I was very careful about what I ate, not elimination diet wise, but I didn't go back to my old diet, which was, you know, processed food, wine, you know, things like that. I didn't go back to that. I never have. I've stayed on a really clean diet since then. As I was preparing for this low oxalate class, I always say, well, I don't have to go low oxalate, but I generally do because I eat spinach, but I eat little handfuls of spinach. I eat kale. Usually it's dinosaur kale, sometimes the other. But as I was going through the various lists and all in preparation for this class, I'm like, I actually have a fairly high oxalate diet and not a super low oxalate diet. I eat chocolate. I eat, what were some of the other things that are higher in oxalates? I recognize several of them. Now, here's the thing. If you're doing the oxalate thing, it's very confusing because there's so many different charts. And I created a new document, which I haven't uploaded to the server yet because I wanted to proof it and make sure it's okay. But I made it last night and I finished it at 2 a.m. So apologize for my indiscretions, body. I should not have done that. But it's a really nice little thing on oxalate. So you can understand that with some charts in it. So I'll get that posted probably later today or tomorrow after the class. So I'm here to support you. Like, where are you? What's happening that's good? What's happening that's not? I know, Ronnie, you weren't able to make it yesterday. And I see a few other names who weren't here yesterday. And I'm here to support you. Like, where are you? Hi. And like I said, we'll keep it short. Looks like a small group of people. So who has questions? Who needs help? Where are you at?
Help.
Help. SOS. I need help.
I've had some really interesting, like I think things that have always been there, but this is kind of like,
yeah.
Bullshit. So, you know, it's something that's not a big deal, but it's just interesting, like this runny nose thing. All of a sudden I'm eating like a completely vegetable soup. I have a runny nose. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. So looking up those foods that are in there to see if they show up on a high histamine list, right? If your body has been struggling, and there's certain SNPs. I have some of the SNPs that predispose me to get a runny nose when I eat high histamine foods. I have SNPs that predispose me to oxalate sensitivity, right? So some of those might be related to some genetics, right? But in the meantime, look at, okay, I just ate this soup. It was beautiful vegetable soup. It had 8 ingredients. You look up each of those ingredients to see if they show up on the high histamine. If they do, then I would suspect that it's a histamine issue. Your body is not making enough of the, you know, maybe you don't have enough of the DAO enzyme that will break down histamine for you.
So the thing is, it's like, it's not a really big deal. So I have a sniffle. Is there something more I need to think about because that's occurring?
Now, if it's not a big deal, it lasts for a few hours, it doesn't bother you, you're not running through, you know, Kleenex by the score, then it isn't a big deal. But there are things you could do. It may mean that you don't have enough vitamin C in your body, in your diet. It may mean that you don't have enough quercetin coming in your food supply to help to combat that histamine, right? Okay. So if it was really bad, I would suggest like a DAO, a histamine blocker kind of thing from Seeking Health, which is a more expensive supplement. But vitamin C and quercetin are inexpensive and they have so many other benefits in your body. Is this a sign that you have low vitamin C and maybe you're not making good collagen, strengthening collagen? Maybe you're not using it to, you know, support your immune system. So I would experiment with the 500 milligrams of quercetin, 1,000 milligrams of C before each meal, you know, or before that same meal, right? If you know that, oh, wait, there are these 8 things. I don't know. Some of them are high histamine. Let me try this again with the vitamin C quercetin.
Okay. All right, then. Then I would know if it's histamine. Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's histamines, then it's like all the ferments, because I've stopped eating ferments for a while, because I'm thinking, oh, man, what if it's histamines? Now, that's really high in histamine. I tell you, I have had an interesting experience. I've got like a plug right nostril. It never really works.
It's been a long-term thing or a recent thing?
A long-term thing as far as I can remember. It's not completely blocked. It's just mildly blocked. And occasionally it's like, it's open. And the last several days I've had moments where it's like, you notice, like the only time you really notice it is when it's open. It's like
when it's open, right? Like, so wow.
Where does that come from? Is it a long-term thing? Should I really be thinking about that? It's like, I don't know.
Be related to the histamine, creating a response in your nostril that causes it to have over time produced a lot of mucus, which then can consolidate, right? So I would let say, is there somebody that can look up there to see if there's actually a blockage, like a polyp or something like that? But what you're saying now, it doesn't sound that way. It may be that the tissue is boggy. It gets inflamed and blocks it off. So one of the things that you could do is, do you have a neti pot? You know what a neti pot is? Okay, you get a neti pot.
Yeah, that whole thing is like...
Well, is it scary to you? Is that what it is? Or just messy sounding?
That whole experience is like, it's like this drowning thing I've got.
Have you tried it before? There are ways to do it without the neti pot. There's this spray thing, like what's it called? Something or other. And then they have a bottle and it's a saline solution. You put it up your nose and you squirt it. So you don't have to lean your head back and pour it all the way up. That can work really well as well. And they have one that has, it's sinus rinse. They have one that has some vitamin C and quercetin in it, I believe. It has some other nutrients in it to help.
So, and you kind of suspect that's histamine.
Do I think what?
Do you suspect that that's histamine?
It could be, right? It very well could be. And the tissue in there is boggy. You know, I would certainly have somebody look inside your nose to see if they see a polyp or they see an actual blockage. But the fact that it clears up sometimes says to me it's probably the sinus tissue. And the reason that somebody put in that it's the Neomed sinus rinse. But when you can do it with a neti pot, you can control substances you put in your water. And sometimes licorice root, which has some steroidal anti-inflammatory effects in there, can be able to break down that bogginess, right? But I would observe to see if that plugged up nose, and then when it clears, if it has anything to do with specific foods or food groups. And it has, and if it precedes or follows when you have the runny nose.
Okay.
But if you're having a psychological like fear over a neti pot because of maybe you just try it, because it's so helpful. Oh my gosh, it is so helpful. It just gets everything clear. It's like, you know, we clear our mouth out, right? If you've got all kinds of food in there, you rinse your mouth, you brush your teeth, you do all that. We don't do that with the sinuses, and you're breathing in all kinds of pollens and crap that gets up in your nose that irritates it.
Okay, I'll think a little bit more.
Read about it. Yeah. Kimberly says she loves her sinus rinse. She does it twice a day for years.
So... I have a couple other questions, but let other people go ahead, because that was one thing.
Well, if you have others and they're on the tip of your tongue, go ahead and ask them, and then we'll go around.
Other people might ask them as well, and I'm going to go get my notebook. So I've got my
okay. I will go around, and it looks like I have Kimberly and then Christine. So Kimberly, go for it.
Oh, hi, hello, hi. Just have a quick. Two quick questions. So one is back on the vitamin C flush. Yeah. So if I'm getting loose stools, like with my new 75% dose, okay. Which I'm not, I'm just wondering, as my body starts to get, you know, regulated, how do I know how much to go down each
That's
day?
That's a great question. It is a great question. And it's kind of guesswork. It's all educated guesswork. But make sure if you are getting that you're spreading your dose out. Because sometimes people take too much of it at one time and then they get the loose stools. So make sure that you're spreading it out throughout the day before you make that determination. And I would just go back. I would probably go down by 1,000 or two. Since you're on such a high dose, I would go down by 1,000 or two, each time. Right.
And how many grams is that? Like a couple grams.
Oh, 1,000 is a gram.
1 gram. Okay.
Yeah. 1,000 is 1,000 milligrams is 1 gram. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And if you have the Perk one, that's about less than a half a teaspoon. And you could even go down by half a teaspoon.
Okay, just a little bit.
Yeah,
okay.
That's just a little bit. Yep.
When you say PERQ, is that the same thing as the Pure brand?
No, it's PERQUE is a particular brand. And that's the one that, you know, Russell Jaffe, who wrote the whole thing on the vitamin C flush, developed it specifically because it's fully reduced. And I don't know, the Pure might be as well. Fully reduced means that the potency of the antioxidant ability of the vitamin C is fully there. If the vitamin C is going to, you know, be a scavenger and break down free radicals, and it's just to do that, it goes from it goes into a oxidized state versus a reduced state. For it to be fully active, it needs to be reduced, fully reduced.
Okay. So if I, like you told me, mix it in like a big batch of water, which I did. Mm-hmm. So I'm just drinking it throughout the day. So if I get like loose stools and I haven't finished all the water, do I just stop for that day with that water?
Yeah, you could stop for that day and then switch to just regular water, save it for the next day. Or you could, if it's early in the day, it just means that probably you do, you know, because we don't necessarily drink equally throughout the day, right? You
might
have been more thirsty, you went exercising, whatever. So I would just calm it down for a few hours, you know, and then go back and take a few more sips of it later.
Okay. Okay.
It's not an exact science, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's just like trial and error. Exactly. So the Pure brand has like magnesium, I think.
Yep. It's buffered.
Which he talked about that in his literature, like it needed to have a certain amount. Do I still need to take the magnesium with my food that I was taking from the sweet spot? Like the liquid.
Yeah. So that's a great question. If you had just had your dose being 5 grams a day, then you're not going to get enough calcium magnesium in there, but you're doing 38 or something like that.
Yes. 39. Yeah.
39. That's a lot. And if you add up how much calcium magnesium you're getting, it's probably sufficient, you know, until you go down to a lower dose. But that's a great question. Perfect. Yeah.
Okay. And then I had a question on tomatoes. So I had added back in tomatoes. At one point I had done like the whole nightshade removal diet a few years ago. I never really noticed a big difference with it. And when tomatoes came back in, I didn't really notice any change in my symptoms. However, there is a thing with tomatoes where I don't seem to digest them, at least the skins. I can always see them in my stool. Is that a reason not to eat them?
No, it's not. It's a reason to pay attention to chewing.
But I am chewing my food and I don't see any other food.
Okay. Like, so you just, but how big are those pieces? Are they just little bitty?
They're like, they come out like shredded. Like little shredded pieces.
It says you're not chewing them, and like, because your body can't put it back together.
Right.
Right. So if it's shreds, that means that your teeth didn't break them down as much as they could have, right? And you could try skinning them. According to the lectin people, that there's more in the skin. So you can easily pull those off if you want to. But it just, it doesn't mean you shouldn't eat them unless it's causing you a problem. It just means that you need to pay better attention to your mouth.
Okay. I do work hard on chewing, but maybe there's something about the kind of
consistency of those.
So maybe I'm just popping them down and I'm not chewing those. Okay. I'll try that.
Okay.
That was it. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Christine.
There I am. Okay. I only have quick questions. It's follow-up from yesterday, but your nuggets at the beginning are just so helpful. I love how you explained that and why the fast would work. That was really helpful.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yesterday you said and not that I have oxalates, but if you do, to take magnesium citrate and C at meals.
Calcium citrate and magnesium citrate with the meals, right? Because they'll bind to the oxalate right there in the food and yank them out through the stool.
Okay. And then, okay, thank you for that clarification. And then yesterday you said I have my probiotic is bifidolacto but just take the Bifido. Just get one with just Bifido.
Right, because of what the symptoms you have, which is everything makes you gassy. It could be that you have a little bit of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, that the organisms that are supposed to be down in the large intestine, and they do fine there, are in your small intestine, and they're producing a lot of this acid. D-lactate is one of them. Hydrogen is another one. They produce this acid, and then it causes you to bloat out. I mean, you know, So you want to make sure that you don't take probiotics that can grow in the small intestine. The Bifido can't grow in that environment. It just makes its way all the way down. And there's a few others. Custom Probiotics has one they call D-lactate free. And so does Claire Labs. They both have one called D-lactate free, which those organisms can't grow in the small intestine, and they won't produce that gas that causes the organisms to grow even more. So they make their way down all the way.
And those are on your webpage, right? I can order
if you
those
go up to the doctor supplement store. Okay. Yeah, you can get them there. Custom Probiotics has them. Yeah.
And this is, I guess, day 16, and for 5 days, no gas or bloating.
Woohoo!
I know that is. It works. This works.
Yay!
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to hear that. Okay. Who else has questions? Wheaton.
You've mentioned a number of times taking quercetin and vitamin C for antihistamines.
Yes.
Can I do this for every meal for months on end, or just while I'm doing this elimination with the FODMAP and oxalate?
Yeah, you could, especially while you're working on FODMAPs and oxalates. I hate to have to go and eliminate more foods because of the histamine, right? So if you can take that with those meals, you also should be taking the calcium magnesium citrate with the meals. So it's like your emergency preparedness package for eating is reduce histamines and yank out oxalates. Yeah.
So I can do that 3 times a day?
You could, yeah, yeah. I mean, you could be a little bit more scientific about it and look at the food list and say, oh, these don't have very much histamine, so I don't have to deal with it now. But that's probably more work than it is to just pop the vitamins with the meal.
I seem to be getting runny noses no matter what I'm eating.
Yeah, so I would take those with the meal, yeah.
Okay, right. Great.
And if that isn't strong enough, we can look at, I mean, if it truly is a histamine issue, we can look at like histamine block from Seeking Health, but it's more potent and it's more expensive. So if you can just do it with the vitamin C and the quercetin, go for it. Okay.
Okay. And then my next question is, I'm 20 days in. Can I add nightshades now that aren't oxalate or FODMAP ones?
Try it. Yeah.
Okay. So I can do, okay.
Yeah. But do them in enough quantity, right? And to see. If you just do a little bit, and so this is contradictory to what I said earlier, but if you do just a little bit, you may not get it. So over the 3 days or 4 days, you're adding them regularly. I'll have a red bell pepper because you were eating like 2 a day. So you go back to what you were eating before, right? I'll have a couple of tomatoes in my salad, and you just eat them regularly throughout that. If you don't see any change in your symptoms at the end of that, yeah, way to go. Good. You got them back in there.
Okay. And any change, take them out. Right. Okay.
Joint pain. And then my last. Thickness in your fingers, whatever other. Yeah.
Okay. My last question is, because I've been doing this detox for the past couple of weeks, I was just in a car with my son who opened up a box with a wheat breaded calzone, and my stomach, it smelled so good, I have to say, but I don't eat wheat. All of a sudden my nose completely clogged up. Now, wow. I don't know if that was coincidence, but I was very curious if that's just because I'm overly sensitive at this point.
Yeah. So there's a couple of possibilities. Like some people are so that, you know, bread, flour type things, they can off gas, for lack of a better word, into the environment. Like if my husband goes into, he's very allergic to soy, if he goes into a health food store, suddenly he'll be starting, I got a soy reaction. And it's because they've just filled the bins, right, with the soy flour. And he's so sensitive. So your little IgAs in your mucous membranes are really like, ooh, and then it can create the other thing is it could be a psychological thing, right? You smell this, you associate it with weed and your body's going, no, get away from it, far away from it, go away, this is bad, right? So hard to say which it is, but one or the other, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was it. Thank you. Okay.
Great. Thank you. You know, I know people, I'll tell you a story about somebody who's been in ERC before for quite a number of years. And she's very gluten sensitive, celiac, didn't know she was celiac, was sick as a dog for 50 years of her life until she figured out that it was celiac and then got the weed out. And now she has, you know, semblance, but she had a lot of problems and she still has a lot of issues as a result. So she finds that she's so sensitive to it. She teaches people, if you're in a household where everybody isn't gluten-free, how to really make sure your cutting board doesn't get contaminated, your knives don't get contaminated. She said that if she goes into a restaurant to order a salad, she won't go to a pizza restaurant anymore with friends and order salad, because just when they're flipping the pizza and the flour is in the air and it lands in the vegetables, she'll react. And so she told a story about how she once went into, back in the day when she was still drinking Coke, but she went into the refrigerator and there was a bottle of Coke and she poured it in her glass and she started drinking it and she got a gluten reaction. And she's like, okay, what the heck is going on? Turns out her father didn't pour it into a glass. He was drinking it out of the bottle after eating his sandwiches. So that's how sensitive she was. So we don't really have a way to measure how sensitive you are other than, you know, your experience with life. So it just may be that opened up and, you know, some of that waif, right, of the smell that you got stimulated, you know, maybe there was some, you know, pieces in there that got, you know, that stimulated you, or it was just the smell, like your body became so sensitive and go, oh no, that's not good. And it started to have an immune reaction.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I don't normally have that reaction and it smelled delightful. So I was just curious.
And it might be that you're cleared out, you know, that you're doing this elimination and your body's more sensitive overall. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is good because it'll tell you things, you know.
Yep. Thank you. Good.
Great. Hey, Dr. Rita Marie, Kathy has a question and doesn't know how to raise her hand. So do you want
to? Yeah, let me open Kathy. I'll ask you to unmute, Kathy. Go ahead and unmute. And for you guys who don't know how to raise your hand, what you do is there's a black bar of all kinds of ideas you have for you. You click participants, and underneath the participants, you'll see a raise hand. So go for it, Kathy.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you. Learned something new today. I'm pretty sure I have histamine intolerance. Almost everything on that list is stuff I ate daily. When I did the elimination diet, I just did a water fast for 3 days. Yep. And then started eating. I'm very, very limited on what I can eat. Yesterday, I wanted to get something more substantial into my diet, so I tried pinto beans. Okay. Now, they don't look red to me, but I probably about 2 hours after I ate, I got itchy eyes and runny nose, and almost everything I eat, is it Wheaton said? I get runny nose and all the time, anything I eat. But when my eyes start itching and all that, I've have eczema around my eyes, and I know that's related to all this food stuff. I finally figured that out.
Yeah, and gut imbalance. So that's the other thing I was just thinking about, is your gut being out of balance.
Yeah. So anyway, I started taking the both products by Seeking Health, the block and also the probiotic. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that for at least a week now.
So the histamine block you're saying you took?
Yeah, I take histamine block before I eat, and then I take the probiotic every day.
They have a probiotic that's a
Started taking the Quercetin 500 milligrams in the morning and at night. It sounds like you say I should take that before each meal with the vitamin.
Well, you're taking the histamine block with. You can try adding that to try to get this down. But the other thing is, I would make sure you're digesting your food. So enzymes with your meal would be helpful.
That's what the block is, I think. It's a digestive enzyme.
Is it digestive enzyme or is it just DAO, diaminine?
No, I think it's a digestive enzyme. I can look again, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay, look again to see. I thought that was just DAO, which is the histamine.
It has that in it, I think.
Okay, but let me look it up. I'm going to pull it up on the screen and just see if
I can go and grab it too. I think.
Histamine. Oh yeah, go maybe, grab it.
Yeah, maybe that's my mistake. I thought it was a digestive enzyme. Because I do have digestive enzymes. I could take that too then, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Seeking health. Histamine block. Here we go. Histamine. Let's see, I can tell how much is in it. So histamine block plus and histamine block. So let me look at them, the two of them. So histamine block. Supplement facts. It's got vitamin C, it's got DAO. Yeah, this one doesn't. Let's see at the plus one. Maybe you got the plus.
Or I might, maybe I thought I had the one with the digestive enzymes. So I might be wrong.
Yeah, neither one of them has digestive enzymes. Okay. The histamine block plus has a bunch of B vitamins, zinc, copper, SAMe. Well, without knowing, you know, your history, I wouldn't, I'd say stick with the histamine because I don't know if it's what you need.
Okay, yeah, so that might,
yeah, so, so then add a digestive enzyme. There's a number of them. I've never used the Seeking Health digestive enzymes. I've used Transformation Enzymes has a really potent one called Digest. That one's a good one. There's a number of them, but that one seems to me to be the most potent of the ones I've used and the one that I see the best results when people add it to their diet or change to that.
Okay.
Get those and then, Dr. Supplement Store.
Okay, thank you for that. I can do that. And then I don't think I've ever had trouble with eggs, and I'm just trying to find something that has a little bit more filling.
How long have you been off of them in this elimination here?
You know, I even before I went out, I probably only ate them a couple times a month. I don't eat eggs that often.
And then right now you've been off of them for the couple of weeks since you've been doing this.
Yes.
So add them back, but it's a food that you're reintroducing. So you do the 3 days in a row, you eat a decent amount of them and then you make sure, right? Sometimes the results are very subtle and sometimes they're pretty obvious. So.
Okay. Yeah. For me, it's been pretty obvious. It's mainly the eyes and, you know, when they start itching or.
And then wait till the symptoms, this is the thing everybody forgets about too. If you have a reaction to something, you've got to wait till those symptoms back down. Because if you add something new to it, you don't know if it's just aggravating or it's something new.
That's right. Aggravating. Yeah, and that's what I'm finding. That's why I don't know what else to eat. I know I'm not getting enough calories. I do take the protein powder and the greens.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, everything tastes.
What about fats? Because there's some neutral things that are not likely to be allergenic. I don't know how you react to avocados or coconut or things like that. But those are, you know, when you're trying to add things back, you want to find the things that are going to get you up to the calories you need. If that's a problem for you. Some people it's not a problem for, so you just keep it low. But add back things that would have calories. And sometimes I have to recommend that you add oils to your salads or whatever, because if you're not getting enough calories, that's an easy way to do it without the allergenicity.
Yeah. And the quercetin I've been mixing with probably 1/2 to 3/4 tablespoons of MCT oil because it mixes better. So I take that twice a day.
Okay. Yeah. And you can always do that 3 times a day. So
yeah. Right. I don't think that's enough oil.
Say that again.
Do you think that's enough oil?
Is it like a teaspoon of MCT oil?
Yeah, or about a tablespoon.
Oh, a tablespoon. It's about 120 calories. So yeah, so you could split that. I'm saying you could do this, the quercetin. Depends on whether you're really, if you're underweight and you're losing.
No, I'm not. I'm overweight. No.
Oh, then don't. No, then I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
If you're not getting enough calories and you're overweight, I wouldn't really worry about adding more in the way of oil. I was just saying add the quercetin 3 times a day. So you could have a teaspoon of MCT oil each time to make it better. Okay. The other thing that works really well is getting one of these guys.
Okay.
And you just put your quercetin in the water, leave some empty space at the top because it'll, and you stick that in and it blends it up really well.
Okay. What are those called?
It's a frother.
Okay. Okay.
It's really good. I have one of them upstairs and one of them downstairs. So when I'm making like a tea blend or if I want to mix my mushroom powders, it works really well. I just stick it in the teacup bed, hot water, and I have a nice cup of tea.
Mushroom okay, tea. And then just one other question. This is for the future because I can't have nuts right now. But when you soak your nuts, how, if you don't have a dehydrator, how long can those last after they dry? Do you have to just air dry them or do you have to
like? No, you don't air dry them. As soon as they're, as soon as you rinse them, you put them in a nice glass container and stick them in your fridge. And they can be good anywhere from 3 to 5 days, but not a long time.
Okay. Okay. I think that's it. Thank you so much. Okay.
Good. You're welcome. Who else has questions? Lisa says, I've been limited in what I can do. I'm renting a room, which should have only been for 2 to 3 months. So all my stuff is in storage. No printer, no notebooks to put into. Oh my God. Cooking is limited. You know, I was, there's all kinds of Facebook ads as you're on Facebook, right? And this was like this young, looks like a college kid and like, you can cook in your room. And it was some kind of pot thing that was electric and she was stir frying and she was doing all kinds of things. So you may look at some of those kind of convenience things or an electric skillet if you don't have a stove, but an electric skillet. Unfortunately, most of them are those crappy coatings, like the Teflon coatings, I don't think are so good. But then a pot, like a rice cooker. That's what I got for my son when he was in college. He had a nice rice cooker and it was big enough that he could boil water. He could cook beans in it. He could cook a lot of things. He could make vegetables in it because he didn't have cooking facility in his room and he hated the cafeteria. So those are some of the things you might do. Okay, so that was Kathy. Ronnie, did you have more questions?
I do. Well, I want to make a comment about the nuts. Like I have been soaking seeds and stuff and then air drying them. I'm in a very dry climate.
So air drying them how? I mean, they just dry by air. Because I've found that if I leave them out after I've soaked them, then they'll rot. But I don't live in Canada where the air, I live here where it's hot.
Okay. And where I am in the Canadian Rockies at 1400 meters, about 4,000 feet, it's dry. So depending on where you are, yeah. I have been able to dry them out in a couple of days. You know, you rotate them and you pat them down and they will dry and they don't seem to rot.
Good. So that's good to know. But if you know, if you live in Hawaii or Austin or Houston, you know, ain't going to work, right? But yeah, you have to, it's conscientious. There are things where you can get more for summer outdoors, like these netting things that you can hang them outside in the sun. Yep. And it keeps the bugs and stuff from getting at them. It's movement that makes a difference because in the dehydrator, it air dries. The other thing that you can do for it is a convection oven. If you have a convection oven, those go down to a low enough temperature and there's circulation of air in those. Those can work as well for drying things. And you know, you can get a cheap, if you're just doing it for nuts and seeds, the cheap dehydrators for like $35, $40 and look on Craigslist and places like that. People buy them and then they don't use them, the round ones. If you're trying to make breads and crackers, you want a full, you know, Excalibur, and those started a couple hundred dollars, but you can get one of those. And most of the time you can look them up. You can find them on Craigslist and things like that. So thank you for that. That's good.
I do have a question. Okay. So in this, you know, cause everything is already removed unless I remove coconut and all the other vegetables that I eat. Cause it's like now I'm occasionally eating pumpkin seeds because it's like I want to eat my hand. I'm just like, if I leave the kitchen, if I have something to do, it's way better. It's great. But I don't know if this is correlated, but it's like over the last almost month, I guess it is now, it's like I think that generally my energy has improved. My sleep, not really. But, and so I'm exercising, but now I'm really cautious because it's like, if I think I overdo it, like yesterday I went for a relatively short ski. It was like an hour and a half. And it's something I haven't done in years. So it's like using Mother Moon 7 a day.
So you're talking cross country skiing? Cross
country. So I mean, a day.
Yeah, no, you're using.
I mean, oh, that's even sore. Anyway, So I've been trying to run a couple of times a week. I do an exercise class a couple of times a week that, you know, that are invigorating. And I'm walking as much as I can. Now I have to move. So now I've got this whole other stress thing going on. Anyway, I'm wondering, like overall the energy is better, but is that really because I've knocked out seeds and nuts? Like,
really? We don't know yet, right? That's the elimination phase. And then how long have they been out, the nuts and seeds, other than the pumpkin seeds? And I think you said sunflower too.
Yeah. And chia and occasionally flax. Although hemp, you said there was generally people don't respond to hemp. Hemp has never been a huge part of my diet, but it's adding it to soups because it makes it creamy, blah, blah. Anyway, those are the things that I have in, but it's like I'm unsure of where to go. I feel like this is where the brain fog really is eliminated. I'm unsure now of what else to do. I've got this nasal thing is really interesting. Okay, it's really minor. Now, what else do I do now? I don't know what to do anymore. I feel a little bit discombobulated.
Okay.
Like, I can't get rid of anything else because it's like, I can't.
No, you don't. This isn't about deprivation. This is about figuring out. So you've been off of certain things. You notice, my energy's improved. I want you to use the symptom chart to write down sinus, brain fog, energy. I don't hear you say any other major symptoms. So those are the ones. And now you're going to rank them for the next few days. Keep track of what you're eating, rank them. That way, when you add the nuts back in, like say you say, okay, I'm going to test cashews right now or walnuts or whatever it is you decide you want to do. And you do that. You don't do it in excessive amounts. You don't like eat a pound of cashews every day or whatever, but whatever a normal amount would be, right? A couple of tablespoons, a quarter cup, whatever that you add to your diet every day. And you go back and every day you're still ranking those symptoms to see how you're doing with it. Because it's subtle, right? Energy is a tough one. Was it related to sleep? Was it related to the exercise I did yesterday? And so you want to get enough of a, you know, I'm pretty consistently, 7 out of 10 on my energy. Great. Now I add these foods back in and I'm pretty consistently a 7 out of 10 on energy. Good. Right. Then it passes and you go, you know what? I wasn't feeling so good, but maybe I didn't sleep well last night. I'm only a 5 today. Maybe it's the cashews. Maybe it's the whatever. So you do it consistently for 4 days. And if for 4 days straight on adding the cashews with nothing else changing, your energy is plummeted, then it could be this cashews. They go on the suspicious list. You'll go back and test it again, but they go on the suspicious list. If you eat a meal, right? Say you add walnuts to a meal and you like are flat out exhausted, go lay on the couch, kind of want to take a nap kind of thing. You note that. And you do that for the 3 days or 2 days. Because if that happens 2 days in a row, you're like, I'm not eating this anymore. You take them out and that doesn't happen anymore. Then it's not even on the suspicious list. It's on the hit list right now.
Right. And this whole thing with histamine, do you ever heal from that?
That's a good question. So do you ever heal from it? If you have a genetic tendency to not make enough of those enzymes and you're eating foods that are higher in histamine, you've got to do something about it. So you don't actually fix your body's ability. Like if you have red SNPs, right? The homozygous SNPs for lack of enzymes, and there's several of them that break down histamine, and you eat a lot of high histamine foods, you're eating fermented foods 3 times a day, and you're eating all kinds of stuff that's high in histamine, then your body is only at 80% 20% capacity of breaking down histamines. So it's going to be slow. So you give it help and you keep moderated. You keep moderate on those specific foods, right? You don't go overboard on them. For me, I didn't even know I had, Lisa ran a more advanced genetic test for me, right? Where they went into a lot of stuff. And I didn't even realize I have a lot of oxalate genes. You know, some of them are red, some of them are yellow, but I have quite a number of them. And I don't like go crazy like Wheaton's doing right now with a complete, you know, lower on oxalates. But
I didn't like that, Wheaton, my friend.
I didn't mean going crazy. You know, she's just having to be serious, strict about it.
Yeah.
But I realized that I mostly moderate high histamine foods. I just naturally am not attracted. And I was eating a lot of fermented foods for a while, and it looks like I have some of the histamines as well. And I was eating a ton of it. Like my body was craving. And now it's like, I'll have yogurt, but I'm not eating as much in the fermented veggies anymore. And it may have been that I needed the probiotics, but then my body got this sense of it's too much histamine, slow it down. So tune into your body, because sometimes it will crave something. And if it's not M&Ms that it's craving or something that's really not good for you, if it's just craving a healthy food and you go for it and then you don't crave it anymore, it may mean that whatever you were craving it because you needed something in it, and now you're not needing it anymore. I have a feeling the reason I've been craving chocolate so much the last few months, I also have some magnesium SNPs, right? That I need more magnesium. And I have, it's kind of an oxymoron, right? I need more magnesium and I get it from the chocolate, but the chocolate has oxalates, which sucks away my magnesium. So it's not the best choice of food, but I realized, that's probably why I've been wanting the chocolate is because of the magnesium. So I need to get my magnesium and, you know, start to just regularly take my liquid or my powdered magnesium, which I'm bad at doing. So it's like really tuning into your body and asking, why is it gravitating towards this food and away from this food, right? Make yourself eat more spinach. No, if your body is kind of like gravitating away, it's not a good idea. So listen to your body. And if you're eating a meal and you added a new food to it and you feel like you want to go lay on the couch. That used to happen to me with wheat. I switched away from wheat, but I didn't stay away from all the gluten. I was doing kamut and spelt. And I would have this spelt pasta meal. And it literally would feel like everybody go away. I just need to go to sleep. And I went, huh, right? And then, you know, the more research I did, the more I did the complete gluten-free. And it's a good thing I did because now I look at my genes and it's, you know, it's pretty obvious from my genes that I need to, right? So do we ever get over it? You know, it's like if you're genetically programmed in a certain way, we learn to adapt our lifestyle to optimize the genetics, right? If you can't metabolize caffeine and it's interfering with the 4-hydroxyestrone, which is dangerous carcinogenic estrogen, like you just really, there's no way around it. Just stop drinking the caffeine, right? Or else it's going to put you at higher risk of breast cancer. I was trying to use that for myself to motivate myself to stop the chocolate, because chocolate's my only source of caffeine, but I'm green on that SNP. So I processed caffeine real well. So I couldn't motivate myself that way. Right. So anyway, we all have these little things. Nobody's perfect. I've never seen a perfect gene panel. I've seen some really bad ones and I've seen some moderate ones, but we all have adapted. We all come from these environments. Some things get epigenetically passed down to us and some things don't. I have a tendency to have the sinuses. Why? I grew up for 21 years living in a household where both parents smoked and they never smoked at the same time. That's the sad part about living in a household where people smoke. It's not like you could escape it. Like, okay, you guys smoke at this time. I'm leaving and I'll come back. No, one would light up and then the other would light up. And it was like constant. And it's secondhand smoke. It's thirdhand smoke in the carpets and in the, so my weaknesses tend to be in those respiratory things, right? And the combination of that with the genetics. So it's quite interesting to see this. And it's like, we don't want to get so bogged down and so scared to eat. We just want to be empowered. That's the whole point of this, is to empower you to eat the things that feel the best. And how much of it can you eat, right? How much sauerkraut or how much of a high histamine food can you eat, as long as you're taking your vitamin C and quercetin or doing what you need to do to keep it from hurting you. Is this helping?
I think I need to listen to it again, because it's like it's kind of gone over my head and I'm thinking, oh man, I can't, I'm having a hard time grasping things today.
Yeah. So basically, do the things you do, add some of those nuts back in, but carefully track them.
Okay.
Right? And see if it makes a difference on the brain fog or the energy.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I will do that.
And make sure that you've updated all your supplement lists for us, because, and I think it's a couple of weeks in ERC, we're having a supplement retreat day where I'm going to look at it. And I don't want to spend 2 hours asking each person what their supplements are. I can't do that. But if you've filled out your sheet in advance, I can look through that and say, you know what, based on what you're telling me here, you're too low on vitamin C, or you shouldn't be taking this, or you need that. I mean, I can't give you everybody a like complete thorough 2 hour analysis, but I can definitely help hone in as long as you fill out your forms.
You know, you're talking about magnesium. I mean, I've been upping my magnesium. Does it, and I've been doing it in the evening because I thought that was a relaxant, but you're talking about doing it with food.
With food, if you have oxalate sensitivities. Okay. With food, if you have oxalate sensitivities. Yeah.
Say that. I know you did. And it's like, it just...
That's okay. We hear, you know, we all like absorb about 7 to 10% of what we hear. And, you know, that's why I repeat things, because, and sometimes it's, they say, you said that already. Why are you saying that again? But for the people who didn't get it, or for how you're perceiving it now.
Okay.
Yeah. And magnesium, like I'll take it. I usually take it earlier in the day because I don't remember to take supplements at night. Right. And I know I need, I've been slouch on my magnesium if I wake up, you know, 5 a.m. and I have a cramp in my calf. And I know, whoops, you didn't take enough magnesium. Whoops, it's been about a week or two since you took your magnesium. That's not good, right? I should keep the magnesium by my bedside. Actually, I think I do, and I just forget that I have it. I have the magnesium oil. Anyway, there's ways we have to try to get ourselves to do what we need to do. Okay. You're welcome. All right. Time to go. You have one last question, Wheaton. Is that what I saw? Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
I'm currently eight things now. Zucchini, squash, radishes, hemp, lettuce, cocoyo, blueberries, and raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain fog is much better. It's amazing. I'm a little short-tempered now, which I'm not normally, but the brain fog is better. I'm still getting bloating issues. And so I'm mentally thinking it's the hemp or the cocoyo, but I'm worried because I have so few foods now that if I get rid of those, it's going to be an issue. So can I just take my current bloated feeling with slight headaches and runny nose and use that as a baseline?
You can use that as a baseline, because if it's less bloated than you were.
Okay.
Right? If it's still the same amount of bloated than you were, then I want to figure out how. When you, probiotic wise, are you on just the D-lactate free and the bifidobacter?
I have a bifido with B-lactis. Told yes to take Caseri and no to take Caseri. And then I have another one and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Okay. You might just try to break it down for 3 or 4 days to just taking the Bifido and see if that makes a difference on the bloating. It won't happen immediately. It may just take a while for those guys to like die out if they are like stopping there. The other thing is your vagus nerve stuff to keep things moving, the migrating motor complex. Mm-hmm. I think it was Kimberly who started taking the ModoPro from Pure Encapsulations, and that helps to keep things moving. Very important with the bloating that you have discrete meals, that you're not eating and then eating again 3 hours later, that you get at least 4 hours between the meals, because there's this thing called the migrating motor complex that moves things down. And if you put more in before it got to move the other stuff away, it's going to be another 3 or 4 hours before it can start to move stuff down. And then everything builds up, the gases build up and you get bloated.
Okay. I think I'm pretty good about it, but yes, there are times where I'll throw a couple blueberries in my mouth, but Other than that, yes, I do only have three meals and that's it.
And make sure there's at least 4 hours between them.
Okay.
And then the vagus nerve, like really those vagus nerve techniques can be helpful for moving things along. Trafala can be a helpful one, or the Modal Pro from Pure Encapsulations to help move things down more quickly.
What was the term that you used
to move? Trafala? Oh, it's the migrating motor complex.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Will you do any more of these calls again?
If I keep getting begged, I'll find time. I can't like commit in my schedule. I have so much going on the next couple of weeks, but yeah, we'll probably do one in a week. I don't want to leave you guys hanging. Plus you've got the ERC calls. So I think there's, yeah. And we have a couple of the retreat day type of things happening as well. Okay. And there's Tuesday, I think this Tuesday. Yeah, I think this Tuesday is the general empowered self-care Q&A call. So you can get help there, right? Okay. So I don't really need to have a separate one for this next week. But yeah, please do come to that and ask questions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah. Okay, did you have one more, Ronnie? You're holding your hands. I didn't know if you're like, I want to ask, but I don't want to bother. Okay. So guys, thank you very much. Hopefully you can come to the show later. Those of you who have oxalate sensitivities will want to be there. Those of you who don't may not. So I'm trying to make some fun stuff. Try to stick to the stuff that's generally agreed upon as low oxalate and not make it so restrictive. Okay. And we won't have any chocolate at that one though. Sorry, no chocolate. All right, guys. Bye-bye.